Hello, everyone. This is Dan Sheridan, and this is number 10 in our series on justification. Thank you for joining us. Warning, what you are about to hear is not popular with the adversary. And if you have a high opinion of yourself, you may not like this program either. But hopefully you'll come around. You can reach us at, we have a phone number. It's 847-312-4676. You can call us there. And you can go to our website as well. It's crossandthrone.com. Crossandthrone.com. Go on there, sign up for our newsletter. Also, you can look at, listen to all our audios and download them for free. And there's some teaching on there. We finished our series on the life and letters of Paul. Go there and listen into that stuff. Also on our website, we make available to you the greatest Bible translation on planet Earth, the Concordant Literal New Testament, along also the Concordant Commentary on the New Testament. These two tools alone will give you a greater education than if you had spent many years at a seminary. You'll learn more about God and God's truth in these two items, and that's my opinion. But go ahead and get yourself a copy of that. Well, we are in Paul's letter to the Romans, and discussing justification as is found in the first four chapters of Romans. Last time we went through verse 17, and I want to read them again because it's worth repeating. Paul says in verse 14, to both Greeks and barbarians, to both wise and foolish, a debtor am I, thus this eagerness of mine to bring the evangel to you also who are in Rome. For not ashamed am I of the evangel, for it is God's power for salvation to everyone who is believing, to the Jew first and to the Greek as well. For in it God's righteousness is being revealed, out of faith for faith, according as it is written, now the just one by faith shall be living. As we pointed out, and I'm going to read a comment here from the Concordant Literal New Testament on these verses. The Greek must not be confounded with the so-called Gentile or man of the nations. The Greek is the cultured, refined person, sometimes in contrast with the Jew, the religious man, but here in contrast with the uncultured or barbarian. Barbarian seems to be the only available term in English for this Greek word. It denoted especially one who did not speak Greek, the language which nearly all the world spoke at that time. The evangel is God's power for salvation. Now, this is referring to Romans 1, where Paul says, for not am ashamed am I of the evangel, for it is God's power for salvation. The evangel is God's power for salvation. Nothing else can take its place. There is no other power in the universe which can turn men to God. Do you hear that, friends? Nothing can take the place of the message of the evangel. There is no other power in the universe which can turn men to God. All the modern substitutes and expedients, sanitary or social, impassioned oratory or emotional excitement cannot save or make men right before God. And friends, I want you to hear this. Nothing can take place of the evangel, the message of the crucifixion, the entombment, and the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. There is no other power but in that message. Any modern substitute and expedient, whether sanitary, that is the appeal to clean up your lives, or social, any kind of social gospel, any kind of impassioned oratory or emotional excitement, none of these can save men or make men right. We pointed out last time, you can be ugly and have a terrible voice and still have the ability to proclaim the evangel. It has nothing to do with man's power or abilities. The evangel alone, without any additions or apologies, is able to justify anyone who believes. This evangel imparts God's own righteousness to those who accept it. This is unspeakably more than the pardon or forgiveness proclaimed at Pentecost by the 12 apostles. Friends, justification is more than pardon. It's more than forgiveness. Peter and the 12 proclaim forgiveness and pardon. Paul goes on beyond that and proclaims justification. Forgiveness is a fringe benefit of justification. In the gospel, according to Matthew, the Lord Jesus tells a parable about a man who's forgiven, but because he does not go out and forgive his brother who owed him, the forgiveness was withdrawn by the king. That was God's message to Israel. But for us today, our message is not, so often we confuse, the gospel is not about forgiveness, friends, it's about justification. Justification, God declaring us righteous, this is more than forgiveness. Friends, you and I, when we don't correctly cut the word of truth and we mix Peter with Paul, we do not do any favors to ourselves. We only impoverish ourselves. We need to take Paul's statements regarding us and apply them, and then we'll have true riches, friends. We have more than pardon or forgiveness. Now, in verse 17, Paul quotes Habakkuk 2. He says, "For in it God's righteousness is being revealed out of faith for faith, according as it is written, now the just one by faith shall be living." So when the law failed utterly and Israel was far gone in apostasy, the prophet Habakkuk fell back upon God's unconditional promises and made this statement here in Habakkuk where he says, "The just shall live by faith." And now that Israel is again apostate in this day, this rule once more supersedes the law. And this is the time in which we're living. And now we come to verse 18. And as I pointed out yesterday, in verses 16 and 17, Paul states his theme, which is the evangel and God's righteousness. And he's going to pick that up again in Romans 3, verse 21. But before God does that, what he does here from chapter 1, verse 18 through 3, verse 20, is he shows man his unrighteousness. Before man is prepared to receive God's righteousness, he must first be shown that he himself is not righteous. So if you do have a high opinion of yourself and you think there's something good in you, you probably will not like Romans 1:18 to 3:20. Because in Romans 1:18 to 3:20, Paul's goal is to show us that all sin and are wanting of the glory of God. You and I have missed the mark. The word sin in the Bible, friends, so often when we think of the word sin, we think of it as something, drunkenness or adultery or so forth, but the word sin simply means to miss the mark. And the Old Testament talked about those who were shooting arrows and they can shoot at a piece of hair and not miss. So imagine somebody lining up with an arrow, a piece of hair a long way away, and they let the arrow go and they hit the piece of hair. And it says they would not miss it. So what that is telling us is that sin means to miss the mark. It's the Hebrew word for sin that is used there regarding missing, not missing. And friends, you and I have missed the mark. You and I fall short of God's standards. And so here, Paul is showing us that in Romans 1. Now let's read Romans 1, 18 to 23. We read these words, "For God's indignation is being revealed from heaven on all irreverence and injustice of men who are retaining the truth in injustice, because that which is known of God is apparent among them, for God manifests it to them. For his invisible attributes are clearly seen from the creation of the world, being apprehended by his achievements, even his imperceptible power and divinity, for them to be defenseless. Because knowing God, not as God do they glorify or thank him, but vain were they made in their reasonings, and darkened is their unintelligent heart. Alleging themselves to be wise, they are made stupid, and they change the glory of the incorruptible God into the likeness of an image of corruptible human being and flying creatures and quadrupeds and reptiles." So the apostle now takes up the conduct of those of mankind who had no written revelation. He starts off in Romans 1:18 with the Gentiles, the nations themselves. Nature alone ought to teach them much about the deity. His attributes are in some degree revealed in his works and creation. Such a knowledge call of God, such a knowledge of God is revealed in his creation, a call for worship and thanksgiving. Instead, they degraded his glory by making images of him like themselves or even the lower orders of creation. Idols may be nothing in themselves, but as they are supposed to represent the deity, it is of the utmost importance that they do not suggest false ideas about him. Hence, he abhors all images and would not allow his people to harbor them. Christ is the one image that truly represents him. And it's in summary what we have here in Romans 1:18-23. God's indignation is revealed on all irreverence and injustice of men who are retaining the truth and injustice. The Gentiles had the knowledge of God in creation. The Jews had the knowledge of God in the law of God because they were given the law. The nations weren't. And yet, both, we're going to learn here in Romans 1:18-23 that both the Jews and the Gentiles retain that truth in their injustice. And we just saw here the Gentiles knew God in creation. God's invisible attributes are clearly seen in creation. If you want to know if there's a God, just look around you, friends. He exists. You see it by the evidence of his works. And so all of his invisible attributes are clearly seen in this creation through his achievements. What are God's achievements? Well, his achievements are this great creation. By the way, in Romans 1:20, his invisible attributes are apprehended by his achievements. And that's the only, that Greek word is also used in Ephesians 2, where God says, you and I who are believers are God's achievement. And that is true. You and I are his achievement in the new creation. We are members of his body. But here in Romans 1, his achievements here are referring to his works in creation. And men, through the Gentiles as a whole, through they saw the evidence of God in creation. They had the testimony of Noah. And then we're going to read in Genesis 11 and 12 where men rejected the knowledge of the true God. They built the Tower of Babel and went into all kinds of idolatry. As a matter of fact, God called Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees. And it says that Terah, Abram's father, and Abram himself, Abraham, worshipped other gods. And that's what we have here in Romans 1. Well, we'll have to continue next time. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 847-312-4676. You can also go to our website at crossandthrone.com. Go there, friends. Listen to the audios for free. Sign up for our newsletter. Also, get a copy, order a copy of the Concordant Literal New Testament and the Concordant Commentary, the two greatest tools you can ever have in your hand to learn about God and rejoice in our great salvation. And we hope you go there. We also have Martin Zender's book, How to Be Free from Sin While Smoking a Cigarette, and also his book, How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. And these are great books for you to read. I got to run now. Until next time, believe God. No matter what the clergy tell you.